My day is 6 a.m. to noon, and I'm not crazy. You're crazy for thinking it takes 24 hours, just like some dude in a cave did 300 years ago. My second day starts at noon and goes till 6 p.m. That's day two. And then the next day is 6 p.m. to midnight. What I've done now is I have changed and manipulated time. I now get 21 days a week. Stack that up over a month, I'm gonna kick your butt. Stack that up over a year, you're toast. Stack it up over 5 years, my entire life is different than it would have been otherwise.
I'm gonna give you the single hack that has made me the most productive in my life.
Here's how I organize my calendar to get more done in a week than most do in a month.
Here's how to have the most productive day ever in 5 steps.
Where is your time being spent?
A morning walk is a non-negotiable.
Even if you don't feel like doing that hard work, you can still push yourself to do it.
I completed 6 months of perfect sleep.
I try to get people to drink 25% of their total intake in the morning.
I don't take any days off.
It's going to be the hardest thing you ever did. Along the way, you're going to lose all your fucking friends. Nobody's going to relate to you. No one's going to understand why you're doing it. Everybody's going to question it. Guess who's laughing now? Not them, motherfucker. Me.
These days, if you're not waking up at 5 a.m., running a side hustle, meal prepping kale, and optimizing for your REM cycles, the internet will be pretty quick to tell you that you're a failure.
Winners focus on winning. Losers focus on winners.
Our obsession with optimization is nothing new, but has long since expanded beyond the self-help aisle at your local bookstore and now infiltrates every form of media that we consume. From our Netflix documentaries to wellness podcasts and TikTok influencers that try really hard to make mouth tape look cool, optimization has become the new religion, and one where if you have a microphone, you're a preacher. It feels like every day there's a new how-to guide for biohacking your way to your peak complete self with probiotic-packed diets, infrared saunas, and sleep syncing. The underlying message being that every part of your life can and should be better, lest you want to fall behind. But when did wellness get so stressful? And what are the downfalls of chasing a perfectly optimized life? That's what we're going to dive into today. How our fears and anxieties are being exploited by the wellness industry, all under the guise of improving our lives. The glorification of the rise and grind lifestyle has gone through an evolution over the past decade into less of a mindset towards building your career, but to a mindset that's shifted inward. It's no longer about girl bossing your way up the corporate ladder. These days, that ambition has turned to finding the ultimate optimization of the self. Gen Z isn't chasing job titles anymore, so much as they're chasing perfect sleep cycles, low cortisol, and scheduled morning routines. From the carnivore diet and cold plunge cults, the 5 a.m. morning routine clubs, the biohacking, the no blue light, yes red light practices, the skincare spreadsheets, and our obsession with the circadian rhythm. It feels like everywhere you turn, you're faced with a way to optimize optimization. The mindset of it all being that every aspect of your life has the potential to be better, and if you're not willing to do the work, then don't expect anything from life. We saw this recently with the viral video of the guy who starts his morning at 4 a.m. with a workout, does his ice bath, his meditation, journaling, and breath work, all before his first Zoom meeting. And this is the new standard of success that we're being sold now. Not money, not titles, but hyper-curated, meticulously tracked lifestyles. And this is just the surface of the movement. The Hubermans, the Rogans, the Tim Ferrisses, all with their own flavor of win the morning and you'll win the day. We're all looking for answers to what we need to do to succeed in life, especially nowadays. And the answers we're given are hustle harder, track more, improve faster, fill every hour, and don't forget to stack your habits. And we eat it up because we also want this curated image of success. In a world where everything feels so out of reach, at least we have our morning routines that we can cling on to and control. So we buy the sleep tracking rings, we buy the blue light glasses, take the supplements, use the skincare, set the alarms for 5 a.m. and force the sunlight into our retinas, all in the name of kickstarting our circadian rhythm. They're very obsessed with the circadian rhythm. But these grueling schedules we feel are the answer to the disorientation we feel during our silent recession. And at this point, the self-help side of the internet is just an infinite scroll of new ways to fine-tune your life, all creating this subconscious hope that the next optimization hack will kick you out of your slump and revolutionize your life. And it's a really easy path to fall down as well. You just see one video about how cold showers improve circulation, and you think, hey, I want all those things. But that's when the algorithm gets you, and the next thing you know, everything you see on your feed is about how these small changes make big differences. The best example I have of this is that weirdo Brian Johnson. He's a millionaire tech entrepreneur trying to biohack his way into aging backwards. He started sharing his journey on TikTok years ago, but has gained so much interest that he was able to seal a deal with Netflix for a whole documentary on the matter. His original claim to fame was from sharing that he does regular blood transfusions with his 17-year-old son because he believes that the plasma of a younger donor can help maintain a younger health and cognitive function. Who knows? But as you can probably guess, he doesn't stop there. He also wakes up at 5 a.m., takes around 100 supplements a day, does his red light therapy, drinks his green juice, of course strength trains, and the list goes on. Point being, every hour of his day is scheduled with an activity or treatment in hopes that he'll actually age backwards. That's crazy, but people eat up crazy. And maybe most people won't go to the same extent as Brian, but they probably feel that if they just took on one or two of his practices, then maybe they also will find success. But when we take a step back from it, the question that arises is, how did we get here? Like, imagine telling your ancestors that the key to success in 2025 is intermittent fasting and wearing a ring that tells you whether or not you slept well. Somehow we took the good intention of bettering our lives and turned it into a cult of whoever does the most and the most extreme wins. The problem here is that the self-optimization movement has really just hijacked the self-improvement movement as a way to make money off people's insecurities. Because self-improvement is something that we do need, and it's so easy to draw people in under the guise that optimizing your morning routine is just as important. And that's something that I do really want to clarify in this video, because I don't want people thinking that you shouldn't be trying to better yourself, because we should, just not with red light therapy and collagen powders. And with that, I'm a huge advocate of therapy and the paid partner of today's video, BetterHelp. We shouldn't have to go through life alone, stuck in an endless loop of questioning yourself, when you can talk through relationship concerns with someone who's trained to help you find real answers. I have my therapist basically on speed dial for whenever something in life comes up that I don't know how to handle or cope with. I really value having someone to talk to and someone to give me the tools and skills that I need to get through these things in ideally the healthiest way possible. BetterHelp is an online therapy resource that will connect you with a therapist who can help you find answers to some of these questions. It's as easy as getting matched with a therapist after completing a quick questionnaire. As well, you can switch your therapist at any time if it's not a good fit at no extra cost. All BetterHelp therapists have a master's degree or doctorate degree and at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of experience as mental health professionals and are thoroughly screened before joining the service. I have multiple people in my life who use BetterHelp and love it for its flexibility and ease of usage. Whether you're a stay-at-home mom, living abroad, or just live with a tight schedule, online therapy with BetterHelp is an awesome resource to help you get through life's challenges. So if you're interested in bettering yourself, click the link in the description or go to betterhelp.com/embersandash and get 10% off your first month of therapy. To do a little reflection on the timeline of self-improvement, I want to look at the trajectory from the 2010s and onward, just because I feel like there was a significant shift during that time. Like, of course, we have a long history of ambition through the 1900s, but it did feel like at the end of the 2010s, we were starting to take a breath and relax a little bit after centuries of grinding it out. As we've talked about before, the 2010s started off with the girl boss era, where us millennials were told to get our self-worth from our careers and climb the corporate ladder to success. But during the second half of the 2010s, the girlies were tired. Tired of trying to become CEOs only to be disappointed that the work we do alone does not fulfill us. And so that's when we saw the rise of the minimalism and slow living era. The philosophy of slow living is emerging as a vital counterpoint to our fast-paced, hyper-connected lives. It's a choice to consciously shift the rhythm of life, embracing a more balanced and deeply meaningful existence by slowing things down and savoring the world around us, as well as the wealth of what we already possess. I remember when I first watched the minimalism documentary in 2015, I felt like it changed my life. I loved it. I loved the decluttering. I loved the no-buy goals and the intentionality and the free brain space. I've already mentioned before that I'm a big documentary girl, and that one was really good during its time when it felt new and exciting. And so many other people loved it as well, of course. I wasn't creating content on YouTube yet, but I remember seeing that basically anyone who put minimalism in their YouTube titles would get hundreds of thousands of views. It didn't really matter what the content was. If you were talking about minimalism, people cared. Because people were tired of the grind. And with a stable economy and our millennial optimism in hand, it felt like we could take a step back and still be okay. Well, all of that changed when we had our global pandemic. We no longer could live slowly and minimally in a world where we had to protect ourselves from infection and stock our cabinets so we don't run out of toilet paper. Even the face of the zero waste movement, Lauren Singer, contributed to this shift, as she said she had to stock up on prepackaged foods because in the face of disaster, one must protect themselves. But while the scarcity mindset of 2020 shocked our intentional living culture, it would have been short-lived if it wasn't for the economic crash to come. Now, I am talking in hyperbole here because the inflation we experienced since 2020 has been so outrageous that it feels like we're in a recession because we can't afford the lives that we used to live. See my recession core video for more on that. But with our future looking more and more bleak each day and our salaries not holding their weight anymore, people just don't have the option to live minimally or slow. And by that I mean we can't afford to live with only one fork and no couch like the minimalism influencers used to show us. But the scarcity mindset we've adopted doesn't really leave room for buying things only when we need them, like minimalism encourages. Instead, we feel the need to stock up just in case and to be ready for the worst whenever it hits.
I'm sorry, but minimalism is for hot rich people, okay? I'm broke. I need stuff. Having things is who I am.
So what does all of this have to do with optimized culture, you may be asking? Well, as the grip of capitalism only tightened, as our economic state worsened, people felt like they needed to take charge and take control of their lives. We couldn't lay about and relax anymore. We had to do something, literally anything.
I was just thinking, if we just get through this week, then it's only one more week until the next week, that we just have to get through that one and then another one after that.
When we're uncertain of our job market, our grocery prices, and our housing situations, then now's the time to lean in, as Sheryl Sandberg would say, and force yourself to find success. So long gone is the slow living aesthetic, because we can't survive going slow anymore. If we're going to make our way back to the American dream, then we have to get up before the sun, take cold showers, do our meditations, and add as many things to our checklist as possible so that we can at least say that each day we're making it one step closer to getting out of this hellhole that we call the 2020s. There is another trigger, however, that caused this steamroll of optimization, and that's with the never-ending access to information.
It feels like we're constantly in information overload. It's because we are. So I was doing some like digging into this, and I just wanted to learn more about it. And I found this study that was released in 2011, where they found that on average, we are consuming 5 times the amount of information every single day that people used to consume back in 1986.
Never before have we had so much access to seeing all the people who are doing all the things much better than we are. It's so odd when you really think about it that we can see into the lives of anyone and everyone, but specifically millionaires and their morning routines. When you're surrounded by high achievers and have access to endless articles, videos, podcasts, blog posts, and books about how to be the best version of yourself, it's easy to get sucked in. It's appealing, isn't it? The idea of being totally optimized. And it really feels inescapable as well, because we are living in this for you era where we don't get to pick our content, really. It's just fed to us. So whether we're interested or not, we see the 5 a.m. morning routines and the supplement smoothies and the time blocking and body mobilization routines and take that information as another thing that we're not doing. And this is for every piece of media that we consume. We subconsciously take in everyone's achievements and make a list of all the things that we should also be doing, as if it were even possible to do all the things. And this excessive connectivity is what leads to productivity guilt. The constant stream of information and social comparisons creates a pressure that if you're not also making progress to your goals, then you're failing, as if we're not allowed to just exist.
Did you know creatine is the most studied supplement in the world? It is so good for you.
I wasn't even attacking you. Like, I wasn't even saying it wasn't.
I wasn't even saying that.
And so when you do actually take a moment for yourself, you feel guilty that you're not as good as these health and productivity gurus. As said here, your brain starts listing off everything you could be doing right now instead of relaxing. All those dirty dishes are really piling up. I should probably begin that new exercise program I was supposed to start last weekend. Why am I so lazy? But the sheer magnitude of knowledge on optimizing life is beyond what one person can even achieve in a 24-hour period, unless you're a millionaire and your whole personality is about optimization. But that's not real life. The regular person can't live up to the standard.
Hey, reminder, we're not programmed to be consuming 20,000 different people's lives and having access to them at the tip of our fingertips at any given moment.
I think we forget that the highlight reel of Instagram and TikTok isn't just white beaches and blue oceans, but green juices and protein powders and nervous system regulation breathwork. So when you think about it that way, it doesn't make sense that we should expect our lives to be like these people online, because it's not even real life. But in a capitalist world where your identity is so tied to your productivity, the price we pay is an unachievable expectation of excellence. And that's not even mentioning all the people trying to take advantage of this productivity guilt, because it makes you vulnerable. When people are insecure, they're more willing to spend money to relieve their fears, and we see this a lot today.
Modern self-help is not about teaching you to be a better person. It's about teaching you to try to be better than other people.
When you have a generation that already feels unstable, it doesn't take much to convince them that they're not enough, and that if they just read, buy, do, or eat this one product, then their lives would be fixed. There's so much money to be made off people's insecurities. Honestly, are most industries based off insecurities? That would be an interesting topic, actually. But right now, people are definitely feeling insecure.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news here, but the self-improvement industry is not helping you make progress. In fact, it's probably the thing that's keeping you in the same place. Right? If you feel like you can't make any long-term changes to your life, if you try a workout program but fail, if you try to read a book but don't really finish it, you might be coming at this the wrong way, right? Just take a second. Just consider this. The self-help industry is based around making you feel shame, making you feel like you're not good enough, so that then you have to invest in some type of intervention, whether that's a paid program or a course, so that then you improve your life. They want you in that place of shame forever.
And the idea of taking advantage of a culture of self-improvement is not a new phenomenon. Again, we have ample books on the markets telling us we're not good enough, but it has exploded into a whole cultural mindset of the 2020s, being that a million quick fixes can lead to overnight solutions to our problems. One of the biggest problems with this whole optimization movement is the impact that it's having on Gen Z, a generation that's already struggling to find their footing in the middle of a housing crisis, a rising cost of living crisis, and a shaky job market. With the recent spike in property prices, young adults are also stressed out in terms of finances when it comes to buying their first property or renting a place to live. The rising prices make it challenging for young adults to afford a down payment for their first home. Many young adults struggle to save enough money due to high living expenses and low starting salaries. And now they're being fed this message that if they're not succeeding, it's simply because they're not doing enough. So they wake up at 5 a.m., run their marathons, do their 75 hard, go to Pilates, hit their protein goals, journal before bed, and still end the day off feeling lost and directionless. It's gone so far that now we're seeing this bloom into the rise of the quarter life crisis.
This is a check-in for the people in their mid-20s. We're talking 23 to 25, 26. How are you? Because I'm...
A quarter life crisis comes about when you're faced with the reality that your life is not what you thought it was going to be. It's a crisis of identity and self-confidence where the script you were brought up with is not applicable to our modern life, and you're faced feeling unsure about who you are and who you want to be. As Gen Z is the first generation to reject many of the milestones that used to be custom for the first quarter of your life, many Gen Z feel confused where to go and what the point is. Because while it's all fine and dandy if you don't want traditional goals like marriage, kids, and homeownership, it's not dandy when at the same time you also don't have the capacity to aspire for more and afford a fun life. As Gen Z is entering their second quarter of life, they feel the pressure to pick a path before they get left behind. mind, but they don't know where to go. They feel lost in their careers because they can't afford to do what they love for work because those things don't pay the bills anymore. So they're having this crisis of not knowing how to proceed when they're not given the same opportunities of past generations. We're stuck between a rock and a hard place. We don't feel passionate enough about any single profession to justify devoting our lives to it. But because of how the economy functions, we have to find a specialization or we'll be stuck doing entry-level work forever. We're scared to pick the wrong career path and commit to a profession we'll end up hating. And the longer you follow any given career path, the harder it is to remove yourself. But then, with a glowing light, in comes the health and wellness gurus, showing them the way to regain control of your life and optimize your own definition of success. As said here, it's a desperate search for control in a world where life is inherently unknown, unpredictable, and unstable. And so that's what Gen Z is doing to get by. They're buying into the self-optimization road to success because it's better to be a marathon runner than to be sad and alone and poor at home. And so, what is the big deal, you may be asking? Why is it so bad if people are choosing to be their best selves? Isn't that a good thing? Well, the thing is, it is until it isn't. Like I've touched on throughout this video, the aspirational lifestyle of putting yourself and your health first for every block of every day is just that. Aspirational, not achievable. It's a never-ending loop of trying to improve and add more to the list when the list isn't something that you can realistically accomplish in the first place. In the world of self-optimization, there's never enough.
Okay, literally, what would your life look like if you did not care about furthering yourself, optimizing yourself, advancing yourself, or improving yourself? I think that you would realize that you actually have nothing to do with yourself because everything you do is in this quest or pursuit of perfection. You need to lose a few more pounds. You need to make a few thousand more dollars. Like, everything needs to somehow fix the not enoughness that you feel. I actually realized a couple years ago that this is how I was living my entire life. Every single moment was being used for self-optimization. My ideal self was always in some ideal future, which, by the way, never came because the future is imagination. And I was essentially just perpetually unhappy. Like, nothing was ever enough for me. It was always that I needed more money or more time or more knowledge. It was never allowing the current present self that I was being to be enough.
There isn't an endpoint where you can say, I've made it. I feel satisfied with my accomplishments. With other goals in life, like writing a book or crocheting a blanket, there's an end date. Each goal has its own ways to improve upon itself, but it's broken down into achievable tasks that you're able to complete. Self-optimization is this weird kind of paradox where you're working towards something that can never really be finished. There's always more optimization that can be done, theoretically. As said here, optimization is a trap of dissatisfaction. Satisfaction. Optimizing is the quest for something as close to perfect as you can get, but that's an unrealistic ideal. It doesn't really exist, and we'll never get to optimal. When we get close, we'll continue the habit of being dissatisfied with the way things are. We'll have to put in a lot of work, but then not be happy. Because the search for perfect is a trap when you're strengthening the mental habit of dissatisfaction. I want to say that again. Strengthening the habit of dissatisfaction. That's a lot to take in. And it's also something that the gurus aren't shying away from either, because again, the dissatisfaction is what builds traffic to their products and services. The endless pursuit of better is leaving people feeling disappointed when you can't keep up. You listen to the podcasts and follow the advice and add it all to your routines, but then another life hack comes out and you need to take that one on as well, and another, and another. As this journalist says here, I've listened to endless podcasts, tried to create the perfect morning routine, tried drinking/eating the foods proven to be best for health, etc. And when I dropped off one, minimizing my phone use, I'll pick up another, writing morning pages. I've searched high and low for habit tracking apps on my phone, or most recent in my bullet journal. If I've missed one or two, I'd be bummed. But when you have 15 habits that you try and do every day, that's par for the course.
I have a hot take. I actually think hustle culture is worse today than it was in 2015. And I actually blame TikTok. 2015, Tumblr and Pinterest used to shove hustle culture down our throat in like a really overt way. Cue those posters that you used to say, rise and grind, I'll sleep when I'm dead. And today social media talks about being anti-hustle culture, but we've just repackaged it on TikTok. I firmly believe it girl culture and the productive morning routine is just 2023's version of hustle culture. And it's less direct, which actually makes it more dangerous and something we're more susceptible to being influenced by. So no, I don't think hustle culture is dead. I think she's been resurrected and rebranded into a slick back bun and a Hailey Bieber outfit.
And it leaves us with this weird kind of dichotomy where we're putting in all this effort to feel better about ourselves, but it's hard to actually feel good when we're constantly being reminded of everything we're not doing. And that's a pretty sad place to be when you are developing, yet simultaneously feel like you're drowning and unsatisfied with your accomplishments. There's no finish line when self-improvement gets taken over by self-optimization. I feel like the worst part of this whole movement is that we've villainized living a normal life. Like, obviously, have your goals, have your aspirations, that's good for you. But it's also okay if waking up at 5 a.m. isn't for everyone. We've become so obsessed with the optimization in life that we forget that a lot of these optimizations come with drawbacks because those aren't included in the podcasts. There's this disillusionment with efficiency's overreach because we only see the alarm going off at 4:45 in the morning. We don't see the fact that these people also have to go to bed at 8 p.m., 9 p.m. to keep up with this lifestyle. Not that it's necessarily a bad thing to go to bed at 8 p.m. It's just not for everyone.
I fully stopped getting up at 5 a.m. and this is why. A lot of my page used to be all about like waking up early, being super productive, and how like getting up at that time would help you do that. And the reality is the time you get up really has nothing to do with your productivity level. Productivity has so much more to do with what you do with your time versus how much time you have.
I myself have gone through phases of waking up early, and while I do enjoy the perks of it, I only do it in seasons because of the drawbacks. I feel like in the motherhood space specifically, it's pushed on us so much that we need to get up before our kids to kickstart our day before the chaos. And yes, that is nice, but then you're missing out on your evenings. Like, you only get one or the other. You don't get both. There also needs to be grace in these schedules because as much as you may like waking up at 5 a.m. for your morning routine, you don't have to be so married to it that you'll miss out on other things. Right now, I'm on the 7 a.m. schedule, and that means I try to go to bed at around 10 p.m., but sometimes if Josh and I are having a really good conversation or we're playing a video game we really like, we might stay up later. And that's not a bad thing. In fact, I think it's a good thing. As parents, like I said, we only get so much time to ourselves, and I'm not about to just cut it short and say, time's up, time to go to bed. I would rather sometimes be a little sleepier the next day and know that my marriage is thriving. There's a balance in everything, right? And these strict rules with the optimization culture are doing more harm than good. And it goes beyond life as a parent as well. If you're too strict with your night skincare routine that you're opting out of going out for drinks with your girlfriends, that's a problem. Your community should be a higher priority than your self-care. And with that, there is a lot of selfishness that comes from this movement as well, because you know what's not optimal? Helping a friend out, taking into account other people's needs, and being a good friend in general. When you're so focused on self-optimizing, then obviously you have no capacity for outreach to pour into the people around you. A Danish psychologist, Sven Brinkmann, worries that the Western world's self-help craze, the imperative to perform and be flexible and optimize yourself all the time, has become pathological. He believes that we've become so obsessed with looking inward and trying to achieve our ideas that it's actually made us less equipped to be human on the outside, like caring for other people. No optimization life hack will bring you as much fulfillment or life satisfaction as strong relationships with your community. And it's weird that this isn't a focus from the optimization movement. Also, it's important to note that there is so much value in downtime. There's a reason that people say that their best ideas come when they're in the shower, because for once, they're allowed to slow down and think freely. I find this all the time when I'm diffusing my hair or driving. I actually have the capacity to think, and that's when I usually come up with my solutions to my problems.
Okay, this is one for my overproductive girlies and my overproductive girlies only. I learned a lesson recently, and I want to share it with you because it's going to sound super simple, but trust me, it took me so long to get this ingrained in my brain. And it is that sometimes doing nothing is more productive than doing something. I don't know about you girlies, but in moments where I feel like I'm maybe not doing enough, or I maybe feel a little bit overwhelmed, my brain's response to that is to suddenly go into overdrive and give myself a million and one jobs to do, because I think in that moment I'm just trying to find a sense of achievement in ticking anything off. But actually, I feel so frazzled and flustered that I can't do any of these things. I then have a to-do list longer than my bloody arm, and I'm then feeling like I'm even more behind than I was initially. This year, I feel like something that I've really learned is that in those moments when I feel extremely overproductive and like I need to go into overdrive, the best thing for me to do is to actually take a step back.
As Greg Eisenberg said, adding more hours isn't always the solution. Sometimes it's about adding more life to your hours. As a side note, this was also something I was worried about going from a full-time stay-at-home mom to full-time YouTuber, was that I'd be missing out on the downtime. Not that there's much at all downtime physically, but there is some mental downtime being a stay-at-home parent. I'm not trying to discount the mental load of parenthood. That's its own video. I could talk about that for hours. But in the moments when I'm folding laundry or doing dishes, my brain could roam a bit and I could think through my video topics and make connections. So that's something that I've actually worked into my schedule now, is just time to think and make sure I'm gonna say everything I want to say, I guess. It sounds dumb, but I feel like if I don't have that time, then I'll just be regurgitating facts and not creating a well-rounded video, I guess. But even if there weren't any real benefits to slowing down, heaven forbid we take a night off, do something the long way, or even just be lazy for once. And really, if we look at the end goal of an optimized life, it doesn't really sound that good anyway. Because the more we optimize, the more we homogenize life. Like, even if we're looking at AI, for example, we all can agree that the efficiency of ChatGPT doesn't make things more intriguing or meaningful.
So I thought I was saving time, but really I was missing out on all the little things that make life like fun and worth it. Like, I never wanted to go to the store. I'd always order stuff online. If I ran my errands, I'd run them all in the same day and like maximize efficiency, because I don't want to leave the house if I didn't have to. And then I read this story about like Kurt Vonnegut just talking about how he would like leave the house so good an envelope. And someone asked him, you know, why don't you just buy a bunch of envelopes and have it at home? It would save yourself some time. And he's like, I'm on this earth to fart around. When you go get the envelope, there's so much more that happens than just getting the envelope. And for me, like, leaving my house and farting around has made me so much happier. Like, instead of, like, being afraid to go out and do anything, like, I'll leave the house, like, 4 or 5 times a day. I don't care. Like, now I'm the one who's like, oh, like, let's just go get that real quick. It's still valid to, like, you know, want to save your time. But for me, like, I was saving my time so I'd have more time to play video games and scroll on my phone, which was not making me happier at all. I'd rather fart around.
When we over-optimize, we lose quality. Maybe not in terms of the bottom line, but in terms of the things that we don't regularly quantify, or perhaps that they're impossible to measure altogether. Qualities like enjoyment, artistry, and meaning. And with that, sometimes optimizing can make life worse. Like, imagine a life that's fully optimized, one where every moment of every day is accounted for and made to be the most productive as possible. Everything is automated, there's no need to overextend or stress because life is a well-oiled machine. The repetition keeps life moving with no adventures or unexpected joys in life, just efficiency. But you can probably guess what you're missing out on: the benefits that come from failing, the joys that come from an unexpected win, the pride of doing something hard. But the fact that life is complicated is what makes it fun. And I should put a little asterisk there, because it does feel a little too hopecore given the current economic and political climate. But the point being that these health gurus are crazy and we should not be getting our life advice from them. And this quest for optimization ends with our lives being more about productivity than fulfillment. Okay, final thoughts. So where does this leave us? It's kind of a difficult situation to navigate because, of course, we want to take care of our bodies and our minds, but it can get very toxic very quickly. Maybe the answer has something to do with your mindset going into these things, like you can still wake up at 5 a.m., but don't tie your self-worth to it. Please let me know if you think you have an answer to this, or if you have any experiences with toxic wellness trends. I would love to hear from you. I previously was doing the face cold baths, and while invigorating, they did give me brain freezes every time, so I decided to stop. But it's such a hard topic because so many of these ideas are good for your health, like eating whole foods and strength training. So obviously keep doing those things. But I guess we just need to be aware that everyone is out to make a quick buck off us. So take any health advice with a grain of salt because you don't know people's intentions. Anywho, that's all I have for you today. Make sure you subscribe if you would like to keep up with my video essays. And I wish you all a lazy day filled with laughter and full bellies. Bye.
Try the carnivore diet. Eat my cottage cheese cookie dough, cottage cheese brownie, cottage cheese bagel, cottage cheese Sour Patch Kids, cottage cheese jelly beans. Oh my God. Oh my God, I don't want it. I actually don't want your cottage cheese jello cup, okay? You are lying to my face when you look at me dead in the eye and you say that's good.